Okay, so as you heard from Keith Green and you heard from Vanessa last week, she used the great word compromise. And I think that as we've gone through chapter 13, we see the people of Jerusalem are starting to really compromise on what they promised God. And Nehemiah went away. From what I learned, it was probably close to a decade. They say, you know, up to 12 or so years. And I see that we can do that. Like, we can promise God so many things, and then I can be that day. Later that day, I'm like, oh, and I kind of forget. I slip right into my old habits, my bad habits. I swear I'm never going to get angry again, or I swear I'm not going to lose my patience, or I'm going to stay on that diet, or whatever I promise. And before I know it, I look at those chips, or I'm going to exercise, and I'm not exercising, or I'm, you know, the kids act out, and I'm all of a sudden my anger's back, or whatever. And it's just amazing how we kind of want to look at the Jews and think, wow, I can't believe how they're acting. But yet, I'm just like the Jews. And yet, how do we see God? How is God acting with these Jews? Anyone?
Merciful?
Yes. Anyone else?
Forgiving?
Yes, forgiving. New leaders, yeah, encouragement. I see he's loving and gracious, and he's always there. And that's something that we're going to learn about more today. So some of the promises, if we go back to chapter 10, they would not intermarry with foreigners. They would not do business on the Sabbath or any holy day, and they would support the temple and its workers. And he also reminded them back in chapter 9, he reminded them of all the ways that God had been with them. They were horrible people. They had done all this evil in front of God, and yet God had, remember all the wonderful attributes. I don't know if you go back to chapter 9, we talked about all the incredible attributes of God, how he's omniscient, omnipresent, how he's loving and merciful, and he is kind. And I tend to think that we read through the chapter of what all the bad things they did, and you kind of think, oh, he's kind of scary. But yet it also talks about all these wonderful, awesome ways that God provided and took care of the Jews. And so Nehemiah is really wanting to get to the people and help them to understand that God loves them and God cares for them. He has a real heart for the people, and he has a real heart for God, and he just wants the people to really come to love the Lord and keep their hearts open to the Lord. So he's been gone for 12 years, and around 12 years, I'll say. Some commentators say 3, some say 12. So we know it was a time, and he comes back and he finds things in disarray. So because of time, I'm not gonna read the passage. I think most of you probably did your homework. But we see that it's on the Sabbath. And I outlined everything that they were doing on the Sabbath. The Sabbath was very important to Nehemiah. It was very important to God. And Nehemiah cared about what God cared about. And they were doing evil, wicked things. This is what Nehemiah is saying on the Sabbath. They were polluting the Sabbath. They were making it common. And they were violating it. They were dishonoring it. And they broke their word. And I think we can do that. I mean, I think God has told them to make the Sabbath holy. And yet I think we can look at making our Sabbath just like one of every other day. Just running around and keeping busy and going, 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 and then before you know it, it's Monday again. And everyone's walking around like, oh, I'm so exhausted. I'm so tired. And why are you so tired? You know, everyone's just running around like crazy, so chaotic. So you just feel like one of these rat races, like one of those gerbils on one of those wheels, and you're just dying to get off. Well, there's a reason why there's a Sabbath, and we're going to talk about that. So I wanted to give you a picture. This is what Babylon would have looked like during the time that these Jews lived there. This was a Persian Herodias that drew this. He had come through, and he had seen this picture as he was coming through, and he drew this. And Nebuchadnezzar was just this wealthy, wealthy person, or this big, great king that created all this wealth for Babylon. And so when he ran the country, it was just almost like Solomon. And you've read about how great Solomon was and all the wealth of Solomon. Well, Babylon was just incredible wealth. And they're the ones that created the banking system for the world today. And so they taught people how to do real estate, how to do taxes, how to do interest and loans. Is it ringing a bell? I think we learned a few chapters back how the Jews were in trouble because they were charging interest and they were doing real estate with people, but they were also getting people into slavery because what was happening when people couldn't pay the interest? They were double charging and they were causing a lot higher taxes, and they were kind of cheating the system, and they were doing it illegally. Where do you think they learned this? From here, from the foreigners. And so their grandparents and their parents, and you know, from decades of learning this, these are people that just had moved into Jerusalem. And so what did they come to? Did they come to a land like this in Jerusalem? Did Jerusalem look like this? No, they came to a horrid place that was just rubble. And they're wanting, like all of us, right? They want their big house, they want their land, they want their nice clothes, and they want their nice donkey or whatever they were on. And they use people to get that. And I think we can be guilty of that. So they were out on Sunday, and they were selling their wares, and they were walking on people to do that. And they were in the temple, though. And we hear about this with Jesus. They were selling stuff in the temple area. And it caused God to be very upset because they were hurting the people of God, and they were hurting God by bringing in this wickedness in the temple. And so I wanted to just show you that we can just be creatures of habit. We learn things from our parents. We learn things from our culture. And we mix the world into our lives. And God's like, we're called to be different. We're called to build. You can see the wall. I don't want to say we should have a wall like Babylon, but we are called to have a wall around our bodies, a wall of protection around our bodies so that we keep it insulated from the world, so that we keep it for God. So in Exodus, it talks about charge no interest if you lend out money. And in Nehemiah chapter 5, I just wanted to bring you back to memory. They had sent out their sons because they had gotten so far in debt. They had given their sons and daughters up for slavery. So, and they'd just gotten out of slavery, and yet they're giving their kids up for slavery again because they wanted material gain. And yet we, you know, there's so many people in debt in America, right? I don't think we're selling our kids out to debt, but I think there are a lot of people who are walking around in bondage. They're in debt. I think a lot of us are in debt for things, or in bondage for things of the world, because we want to keep up with the world and look good for our friends or for our family or for our kids, trying to give to our kids what we never had. And this is what they were doing. So I found this quote, and I thought it was really good. The devil doesn't come to you with his red face and horns. He comes to you disguised as everything you ever wanted. And I think that if you really think about that, you start off thinking, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. But it is. It tends to just take you really, really far off. And Vanessa made a really good point last week. You start off thinking like, oh, it's not that bad. Or maybe it's not that bad of a sin. Or it's not a sin, and you deny it. And so here's God, and then you start walking a little bit different. At first, it's just like this. But then as you go further and further, you get so far away from what God wants in your life. And then a month, 2 years, 10 years, or maybe your whole life, before you know it, you've turned around, and you are so far off of what you thought you were going to be or what you wanted. And sometimes you have a lot of regret. And that's what God's saying. I don't want you to have regret. I want you to experience all that I want to give you. Just stay on what I want. And he just wants you to turn back to him. Turn back to him and keep your heart open to him. And that's what this is what Nehemiah is seeing. And he's wanting the people of God, just have a heart for God. Love God. He loves you so much. So what does Nehemiah do when he sees all this? He takes action. So we don't have time to go through, I'm sorry, all of the passage, but I highlighted some of the things that I think were important. He shuts the doors to the temple. And I remember, you know, growing up, doors on Sunday, all the, you know, we didn't shop on Sunday. And I, when we were in Germany, things shut down. You couldn't do any shopping at all. And at first, I was so used to the American way of life because I had compromised. I was like, what do you mean things aren't open on Sunday? I was like, ugh. And then once I got used to it, it was like, oh, this is kind of nice. We enjoyed our family. We went to church. We just rested. Like, it was a really nice time. So Nehemiah comes in. He slams the door shut, and he stations men. And they're not getting in. And so what do the enemies do? They're standing outside. They're ready to come in. And if anyone's walking out, they're going to rush in because they want to sell. They know people are ready, waiting and ready to buy. But he's telling them, we're going to send you away from the land. He threatens them. And then he tells the Levites, go purify yourselves. These are the leaders. These are the leaders of the people, the priests. And they're taking on, they're doing the same thing. And he's telling them, go purify yourselves. You're doing wrong. And I think as leaders, and I'm not sure if it was Rolana, I can't remember, somebody, and I was talking to Vanessa about this. We were talking, we're all leaders. All of us lead someone. You either have kids or you work, you're a volunteer. You even in friendships, you find that you will definitely have impact on somebody, correct? And so through your life as a Christian, just the way you live is going to impact someone. And so that's what he's saying. Your life is impacting these people, the way they're modeling, you're modeling behavior, and people are following you. And so I just want you to think, how are you living? And what kind of impact is that having on the people in your household, in your community, in your schools, in your workplace, in the church? And do you need to, is there something, and I'm not saying we have to change everything. God knows, so we can't like one day become this different person. We can just look at the Jews and see it's not possible. But we can try one thing and then work on that and then try another thing and work on that. I mean, God's gracious and merciful. Another thing I will point out, and we'll talk about this later, is the part where he says, remember me. And I think it's tender. And he's just asking God to just remember him. And then we'll talk about that. But I wanted to point that out, that it is there. Okay, there it goes. Okay, sometimes I think of God like this. I know when I was a younger baby or baby Christian when I was in high school, I was scared of God. Like, I was like, ooh, he's like kind of mean. He's grumpy. And if I did anything wrong, then I was waiting for that, like that lightning bolt to hit my life. Like, something bad is going to happen. And I sometimes wonder if the Jews walked around like this. Like, if they, because they didn't, a lot of the Jews, if they walked around like this, because they didn't have the grace of Jesus living in them. If they just didn't get it. Like, they just kind of looked at God as being this mean, distant God. A lot of Jews walked around like this. And Nehemiah is trying to change the trajectory of their thoughts. Like, God's not like that. God is a loving, gracious God. And you saw when we were talking, when I told you just a minute ago, when he was talking in chapters 9 and 10, look at all that God's done for you. But I think a lot of them kind of thought of God this way. Like, I'm giving you all these demands. And so they, instead of listening, they kind of wanted to go, oh. And I don't know if some of you look at God this way. Like, he's kind of distant and scary. And what's he done for me? And why doesn't he listen to me? But I just thought this was a time just to kind of think about it. How do you view God? Is he a God that keeps his promises? Is he a God that loves and cares for you? And are you his daughter? And, like, is he your daddy? Are you looking at him that way? Or do you kind of look at him this way? So I wanted to talk real quick about the Sabbath. There's a lot of verses on Sabbath. And Nehemiah really stresses the Sabbath. I underlined, and Sabbath is a word that pops up a lot in the book of Nehemiah. So why does God want you to keep the Sabbath? What's so important about the Sabbath? And we're going to go through and then I'll talk about them. Here's some of the verses. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, Exodus 28, For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Exodus 20:11. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Genesis 2:3. Now we look at this, like, he created everything and he saw that it was good, if you remember. It was finished. He was complete. He had nothing to add, so he took a day of rest. So that's what he's asking us to do. Like, we work and we work and we work. And so he's telling you, take a day off and look at all that you've completed and all that you've done, and think about me and all that I've done for you. Take a day and honor me and look at all that I've provided and done for this country and this world, and rest. Your body needs rest. You need to let your body heal for a day. Enjoy your family. Enjoy yourself and rest. And I'm not good at this. I'm a working bee. I just work. And so on Sundays, I'm like, oh, the house is filthy. And that's my day to kind of work around the house. But that's my day where God is saying, you need to rest. And so I think sometimes as housewives too, we think you want to do that every single day. But I think there's also a day where you need to take a day of rest and let your body soak in God and turn towards God and feed on God and get rest. Remember the Sabbath that you were slaves in Egypt, that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. And so, just another thing, that he protects you. He's a good, good father. Turn to him and let him provide for you. Care for your needs. Look how he did that. And I think sometimes we think about the Jews need to go back and think about what they've done and how he's provided. But how often do we take time to go back and look at how God has provided? I think there's several of you in here that journal. I don't journal. I wish I did. And I would love to start journaling, because I think as you journal, then you can look back and see, look at all that God has done for me. Look at how God has provided. I think it's a good thing to remember everything that God has done for you and your family. And I love this one, because we see, especially after celebrating Easter, Christ did all the work for us on the cross. And we now can just go to him. We have a Sabbath rest every single moment, really, every single day. And anytime we're feeling burdened or weary, or we have troubles or anxieties, or we just want to celebrate, we go to him. He has his open arms. When we have faith in Christ, we know that we just can go, and he wraps his arms around us, and we just feel that lifting up. And feel that those burdens being taken away, our needs. We know he cares and he listens to us. And so I love this verse. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And so I just feel that picture of the Father's arms around us. So rest is a weapon given to us by God. The enemy hates it because he wants you stressed and occupied. Because he wants Christians to be so busy and just chaotic and nasty so that the world goes, I don't want that. They're Christians. Look how they act. And I think you know a lot of Christians like this. Their aroma is just, ugh. And Nehemiah was like, no, we want the world to look at us and want to see us and be strong and loving and have a heart towards God. I think he really wanted people to have a heart towards God. That he wanted people to want what God wanted. So the next part is marrying foreign women. And they had talked about this. So you see that the men that married off to the foreign women, half of those children didn't even speak Hebrew. So if you think about it, their nation was going to end up being decimated, right? It was going to be taken away because half of their people are gone through the foreign wives. And he ends up talking about Solomon, and we are going to talk about Solomon, so I want to say that, was it not because of marriages like these that Solomon, king of Israel, sinned? Among the many nations, there was no king like him. He was loved by his God, and God made him king over all Israel, but even he was led into sin by foreign women. Must we hear now that you two are doing all this terrible wickedness and are being unfaithful to our God by marrying foreign women? And a lot of times when you hear a picture of this, we think about marriage, when you intermarry, like we're talking about, are you intermarrying with the world? So how much are you intermarrying with the world? What are you doing that is compromising and intermixing with the world? And how is that drawing you away from God? And it can be intermarrying, like actually intermarrying with someone that doesn't believe in God and has a real hatred towards God. These people, Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab, were people that just were, we want to call them devil worshippers. You want to say they love foreign gods, but what are they worshiping? They're worshiping the devil. So they're actually devil worshippers, and these Jewish people were marrying people that worship the devil, and they were drawing them away from them. So what do we know about Solomon? Solomon reigned for 40 years, and the first 20 years of his life, he loved the Lord. He was very obedient to God, and God gifted him with peace. And if you remember from David had a lot of war and a lot of bloodshed in his life, and so God said, you're not going to be able to build the temple, even though he really wanted to. He gave that job to Solomon. So Solomon built this beautiful temple for the Lord to come dwell with his people. And God gifted him, or gave him a gift, and that came to him in a dream and said, what do you want? And Solomon said, I want wisdom. So he gave him the gift of wisdom, peace, knowledge, and tons of fame. And so you read about him being, wow, he's so full of wisdom, but he gifted him even beyond that. But what did he have also that was his biggest downfall? The thorn in his side, which we all have. He loved women. I mean, he loved women, and he loved foreign women. So in Deuteronomy 7, it says, do not intermarry with them, and do not give your sons or daughters to them, because they will follow after those gods, and it will the Lord, and will turn them away from God. And we see this time after time after time in the Bible where people married off, and they turned away from God. So I want you to think about, what are you intermarried to? What are you so wrapped up in or married to in the world that it's turning you from God? And I think all of us have that, probably more than one thing. This is a really long passage, but it's perfect because it shows later in Solomon's life, it shows the different kinds of wives he married, the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, and so on. And they were nations that the God had said stay away from, and I love this. He said, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. And this is perfect because Vanessa brought this up. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. So I think we do that, right? It's like, well, God, I hear you talking to me, but it's not that bad. And so you continue doing this one step away. And pretty sure you turn around and God's way, he's still looking at you. He's still calling, you know, Deborah, I'm here. But I'm over here like, like it's not that bad. And before I know it, I turn around and I'm like, how did I get so far? How are you so far? Like you're there, but I've turned my back on you. Like how did this happen? I didn't realize it. And I've talked to so many Christians who have turned their back on God and then are wondering, why is my life so such chaos? And then they realize, if I would just turn around, I could have it so much better. And that's why God's like, stay right with me. I know what I'm doing. So what I didn't realize, and I learned through one of my other Bible studies, is that he built up altars on the Eastern Hill for all of his wives. He had all these altars. And that they were doing all sorts of detestable things, sacrifices and different things, and that the smoke was rising up from the altars, and so it would block the view of the temple. So people in Israel could not even see God anymore, the temple. They saw the other gods. And so isn't that happening today in California? You see all of this, and people are no longer coming to church. People, and maybe in our own lives, we're so wrapped up in what we're doing, then people don't see Christ in your life anymore. And I just thought this, I felt like I really need to talk about this, because we just get so intermarried with the world, so intermarried. We compromise so much that people just don't see Christ in you anymore. And I just and it talks about how God appeared to him. He was there. But Solomon just turned his back. And so towards the end of his life, it says, because of your attitude, he was going to take away from Solomon. And so we'll talk about that. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. I mean, that's incredible. And they all worshipped other gods. All of them were foreign wives, and they all worshipped other gods. Now, I don't even know how you keep 1,000 wives, or, you know, because concubines are like wives happy. But you can imagine wives don't get, you know, more than one wife wouldn't get along. I can't imagine 1,000. And he led the nation into sin, and they turned their hearts from God. And so in Ecclesiastes, he talks about one handful of peace and quiet is better than two handfuls of hard work and of trying to catch the wind. He was so close to God those first 20 years. He had that inner peace. He knew God. He was close, and then he walked away. And towards the end of his life, he talks about it in Ecclesiastes. All of this is meaningless because he wanted that inner peace again. He wanted that closeness. And so he compromised, and that's what he ended up ending up his life with. So you see, if you look on the left, he had all of that land. All those colors are all the land that he had acquired, all the wealth, everything he had acquired. And at the end, at the end of his life, that green is the nations of Israel that God had taken away. That's Israel and then Judah. So God split the nation in two, and so he became one. And he kept his promise, though. God kept his promise. He would not depart from him. And that's where we get Jesus. That's where we get the descendant of Jesus. So it's just beautiful that you see a man who completely turned his back on God. And God said, I will never leave you. And it's through Judah, and we see Christ. And I just think that's beautiful. So we go back to Nehemiah 13, and we see that Eliashib, the high priest, had allowed the son-in-law of Sanballat. And remember, Sanballat was this great enemy, this devil worshiper, and he had caused all these problems they did not want Jerusalem to be this big city because the Samaritans wanted to be the big nation. And so he was now living inside near the temple. And so he drove him away. And he also purified the priest, which we talked about earlier. He says, remember me with favor, my God. And when you look up the word remember me in Hebrew, it's talking about preserve me and care for me. And he's quoting from Psalm 139. And he's saying, I'm trying, Lord. Like you see Nehemiah just like, gosh, like, help me, like, remember me. Like, I'm really trying for these people. These people are difficult. Like, they're hard. And I think, you know, God knows that. He's going to help Nehemiah. Like, he's going to bless Nehemiah because Nehemiah is really trying. I think there's times in our life when we're working with some people who just are hard-headed or you're just like, wake up. Like, they may be going the wrong way and you just are grieving. You see him grieving and mourning for these people. And just to remember, God's going to remember you. God loves you. He cares for you. And he knows you're there. He hears you. He loves you. So this is how I see God, Jesus. As we keep our hands open and we keep our hearts soft towards God, and this is how I see Nehemiah. He had an open heart. He had his heart soft towards God. He was in the Word. He prayed. He worshiped. And, you know, you can just lean into him. You just build trust and faith. And what do you get? You just get joy. Through all that, you just get this joy. We talked about worshiping. Like, you just get joy. And so I feel like Psalm 139, it says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life. And that's exactly what I think Nehemiah is doing. He's constantly asking God to search him. He's confessing sin. He's wanting to be cleansed and leading the people. He wants to be a leader that people are attracted to, that people want to follow, that will lead them to God. And I think I want to be that kind of parent. I want to be that kind of friend. I want that aroma so that people that don't know Christ want to follow Christ. So that's Nehemiah 13. And real quickly, this will escape. Oops. We're going to go into Nehemiah, the overview. And yeah, he looks attractive, doesn't he? That's what my husband said. My husband said he's not very handsome. But I was trying to look for a picture of him, but I don't know how old he is. You don't see anything, right? I mean, there's a lot of people from history of the Jews where you don't know anything about them, right? Tons of people from history on, and we don't know a lot. Why did God choose Nehemiah? Why this man? Is there a book written about this man, right? Why do you think?
Love God.
God
saw his heart, so laid it on him to do the project.
God saw his heart, laid it on him to do the project. Very good.
Extremely capable man.
Very capable man. And I don't have my glasses on, so I can't see. Sorry.
I think he kept his eye on the middle of time. He was very humble. I think that's what
humble and kept his eyes on God at all times. Very good. Yeah. Well, with time, and I'm sorry, guys, I'd like to talk with you guys and get more input, but I know we have want to get to our small groups, too. We know from his journal that he really motivated people, and he got them to act, and we see his heart. We really see the heart of Nehemiah, and that's something that I want to talk about today. So I looked up some, I looked up a bunch of words. And these are some of the words that, can you guys see this? Because the little words are kind of hard to see, but I couldn't get them any larger because they didn't show up a lot. So, but you can see some of the words we have talked about in Nehemiah. And some of the words were, I just want to just look at them. But when you think about the book of Nehemiah, what words stand out to you? What are some things that stand out to you?
Of course, the wall.
The wall. Prayers.
Wept.
Trust.
Determination.
Huh?
Zealous.
Integrity. Yeah, I also think about when we were talking, you see repaired. And when you see carried and next, I see a lot of, like, helping others. So I think when we see other people who are in need or their lives are in rubble, that we can go to them and help them and not be judgmental. You don't see Nehemiah being judgmental, really. I mean, he's just trying to get their lives on track. I don't think we need to do it necessarily in the way that Nehemiah did. I didn't talk about really a lot about the pulling out the hair and the beard and all that. I don't think we need to go up to people and pull out their hair and yell at them. But, I mean, we can do it in a more gentle way. Huh? You would like to. Yeah, I know. Believe me. I think there are ways that we can do it to help people. So
celebration was another one.
Yeah.
Accomplishing something and coming together and
yes,
being joyful.
Celebration is very good. Musicians was kind of one of the words that popped out. I don't know why. It's there a lot. So musicians must have been used a lot. Yeah, yeah. So he was a trans. I call Nehemiah a transformational leader. And when I think about that, it's because I had talked about this in when I was talking about chapter 13. The way he attracted people to him, the way he lived his life out, he modeled his Christian life to how he loved the Lord. He had a heart for God, he had a heart for people, and he cared about the things that God cared about, and wanted he saw a vision, he saw God's vision of the history of Israel, the plan of Israel. And he wanted to be, he was excited and motivated to be a part of that. And his motivation, his excitement, got other people excited about it. So I want to look at a few of his leadership skills, like not skills, but a few things about his qualities through the book that I think are important. The first one is, number one, is he had a real heart for the Lord. And you see this throughout the book. He wanted to honor God. He loved the Lord tremendously. And I think we all see this throughout the book. He feared the Lord. Like I think you see throughout. Like he wanted to obey he really wanted to follow God. He wanted to honor, like he really, when people were doing the wrong thing, he wanted to make sure that they did the right thing. He wanted to do everything that God, he's not perfect, but he wanted to make sure that he was doing the things that God cared about and lived the way that God wanted him to live. And he adored God. You looked at chapter 9, like when God was talking about, he talked about all the attributes of God. He believed in God. He believed that God kept his promises. And he knew that God would follow through. And I love that he just really loved the Lord. And I think it showed throughout the whole book how much he really loved God. And people picked up on that. You see from the very beginning of the book that God had a plan. And Nehemiah somehow knew there was a plan. But he lived in Persia. He grew up in Persia, and he wasn't in a Jewish nation. So how did he know about this plan? Pray? Yes, the word too. Yeah. So you go back. We looked at Leviticus 26, and he references this a lot. He talks about the increasing the numbers. And that they were no longer going to be slaves, and they were no longer going to be, they could hold their heads up high, they weren't going to be despised, and they weren't going to be rejected. God was their God. And then we looked at Jeremiah, and Jeremiah 29, where it talks about that God was going to gather up all the people and bring them back to their land, and he was going to make them this great nation again. And they were going to have all their wealth, and the city was going to be back the way it was before. And but he wanted them to seek them with all their heart. Jeremiah knew that, and so Jeremiah wanted to be a part of that. And so you see in Nehemiah 1:3 that he goes to God and he confesses the sin, and then he says, "I want to be a part of this." He wanted to be a part of the action. And so I think it's really important for us that we know the history. Like, do we know the history of the Bible? Are you in the Bible enough that you know the Old Testament and the New Testament, that you're able to talk about the history? Or do you just kind of know the New Testament? Are you scared and bored with the Old Testament? Or do you know the plans of God so that you're able to know kind of where you are in the plan? And so you can say, "Lord, I want to be a part of that." Even a little bit, even if you just feel like you're doing something little, it's a big thing for God, and you can further his plan. And how much joy that brings to you and to him when you are wanting to work for him. So I used this picture when I taught last time. And this is the devastation that he was going to. And they were happy with this. People were happy. They were just living like this. Okay, not with the fire. And you have to imagine, like, it's all nasty. But think of all the devastation around us. Okay, we have beautiful buildings, and we got to think of minds and hearts, okay? All the devastation around us. And Nehemiah grieved. He had a real heart to change that. He wanted to go and restore the people. And so he said, you know, "I'm ready. I'm armed. I'm ready. Let's go," okay? So that's where I feel like he really had a heart for God and heart for God's plan. Then you see him pray. Number two is he's a prayer warrior. And there's something, I feel like, close to 12 prayers. Some people say 9. I tried to count them, but they're all kind of, some are intermixed. But I'm going to go talk very quickly because we're short on time. But he pauses to talk to God. Like when he's talking to the king, he you can hear him like kind of, okay, Lord, what do I do? As he's having this conversation in his mind, he's talking to God. So we can do that. Like as you're throughout your day, all day long, you can be talking to God. As he's in trouble, like you know when he's being attacked, you know, you hear people gossiping and talking about you and are being really nasty and mean. You see it with Tobiah and Sanballat. They're being nasty and mean and threatening to kill him. And he's fearful and scared. He wants justice and he wants courage and he wants protection. And throughout these verses right here, he's praying to God for those things. He's saying, hear us, remember us. He initiates prayers with others when he's under attack. He gets everyone together and they pray. And that was something, you know, my sister does this. Whenever we're together, she's like, we'll just be out for a walk or a drive, and she'll say, let's pray. And my initial reaction at first, I'll just be honest, is like, ooh, like, I just want to talk because I haven't seen her forever. I'm like, I don't want to pray. That's my initial thought, okay? I'll just be honest. But yet when we do it, and we'll spend some time praying, then I always feel like, oh, that felt good. Like that, I love that. And I don't know why I have that reaction when she says, let's pray. I don't know why. Okay, Satan, I know. But I mean, I don't know why I'm always like, ugh. But I just wish I would be a little more like, yes. Or I wish I was the one that would be initiating more, like every time we're together to initiate. I just want to know, how often do you guys initiate prayer with people? Like when you're at lunch or when you're walking or you're, I don't know, just whenever. Just a thought, like he initiates prayer. And personal. God, think about me. This is hard. I'm trying. Think about me. Or for justice. He does that, right? He's asking for, get back at them. he's being treated horribly. So he models prayer throughout the day, in conversation with others, as he works. They're short. They're not really long. He has one long, long prayer. Long. I think it's the longest in the Bible. And he invites others to pray. God knows your thoughts. Ask for help. And I think we need to confess our sin to keep it cleansed inside so that we can go to God and we give it all to him so that we can be just free. It lightens our load. The next thing is he has a real heart for people. You see this throughout. He mourns and he grieves and he wants to rebuild their lives. And he wants to get rid of all that rubble in their lives and teach them how to follow God, have a heart for God. And you see that throughout the whole book of Nehemiah where he's just grieved and just really just aching for them to just turn towards God. And these are some other words that I see him using where he just is dying, just get it together, like try, you know, like just turn to God. And I don't really have time to go through this all with you, and I apologize, but I just really feel this heart for the people. And do you have a heart for people? Like when you see people, just your neighborhood or your neighbor or people at the grocery store, or people in the church, do you take time to like really find out what's going on in their lives at the church or a neighbor? Or are we just too busy, like with chapter 13? Do you just have to go? And so you just we'll get together. Hey, let's get together. Yeah, let's plan it. And then you don't, right? Take some time out to really get to know some people and make that a priority. The next thing, he doesn't compromise. He refused to compromise, and someone mentioned it, I don't remember. He was full of integrity, and he was transparent. And when they get made all these promises, I don't think that Nehemiah did. I believe that he really tried to follow what God did. And there were two examples where he was constantly confessing, and he was honest with the people when he was charging interest. He said, you know, let's stop charging interest. So he wasn't perfect, but he was he was honest with the people. And I think it's important for us to be honest with others. So just real quick, those are the four things. I'm sure there's more. We could have spent, you know, a whole hour talking about what Nehemiah is, but just tried to remember very quickly to go through, real quickly go through what I felt like were some key things that I got from Nehemiah. So I said, remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. So I feel like, and that's from Hebrews 13:7. I feel like, be careful who you follow. Who are you listening to? Because you tend to hook on to people who are, who you feel like are godly or who are important. Like, I tend to like download a sermon and start listening, and then I'm like, oh, and then halfway through, I'm like, I don't know if I agree with that. Or I start listening to people a long time, and then I'm like, they're great, and that's great, but just be careful, right? I think we need to just always keep in check who we're following and for what reason. And also for yourself, people are following you. So what kind of leader are you emulating? Oh, that's it. So real quick, I think I want to turn off the lights because this is a black and white. I really like this. It's going to come on really quick. I just want you guys to take some time. Like I said, it's a little bit long, and I apologize. We're kind of running over. But just take some time to reflect on what Nehemiah meant to you, the book of Nehemiah. And I want you to spend some time praying to God. What are some areas that I need, some debris I need to get rid of? And are some areas I need to work on, like some good things in your life that maybe you are doing that could be done better, or just be thankful. Think about all that God's done for you and how he's there for you and loves you.